Good morning. Brother Don put in the banner of love, if y'all read it, about how long you're supposed to stand if you're asked to introduce, open up, take some time. I don't know. I'm not sure what he asked me to do this morning. But it's always a fearful thing for me to try and stand before the Lord's people. It's a sacred place, and it's not to be taken lightly or frivolously. Not to say that we can't laugh and enjoy ourselves. I'm thankful to be here, and I'm thankful for each and every one of you. You don't know how much. I was made to fill up with pride yesterday. Just, and the people I was with didn't know that it happened. But something was said yesterday, and I mean, that's true. That's true. And they won't be embarrassed, but I'm going to tell you what it was. My granddaughter and her best friend, Trinity, we were sitting in a restaurant with Trinity's mother, stepfather, and sister. And we got to talking about going to church. And Trinity started talking about the church here that she comes to. And she started out, well, my church. And she says, well, I guess I could call it my church. And I said, yes, you can. And Haley had mentioned a little earlier about how she hadn't been to a Primitive Baptist church till she come out here to live with her grandmother and I. She said when she got here, she was, where's the drums? Where's the guitars? Where's the lights? You know? But as we talked about it, yeah, we're a little different. But they both said and they agreed, you know, those people get just as excited in the Lord as all those other people do with the bands and all that noise. And I mean, I just almost exploded that they see in you the love of the Lord and the excitement and the happiness that we come together to worship the Lord, and we're happy about it. We're not upset that we've got to come to church, and we get here. People come to church, and on Wednesday nights, they both come on Wednesday nights, and they enjoy and they claim it. So I hope y'all claim them too. So, amen. You know, I was reading in Ephesians. And I was thinking about the sixth chapter of Ephesians, which is the verses that talks about the whole armor of God, and that's been preached a lot and in this stand, and most of you can probably quote those things. But I was sixth chapter, the 10th, the 11th verse is the one that I'm, 10th and 11th verse, I'm going to read that, but the 11th verse is where I want to concentrate my thoughts and then turn over self over to Brother Don. 10th verse. Finally, my brethren, who's he talking to? Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Whose power are they supposed to get a hold of? The Lord's, his might, not their own. And it talks about the armor of God. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Well, we've read that a lot over and over and over. And I said, what's the definition of wiles? You know, that we can stand against, you know, you could say, okay, well, his resist the devil. So I had to look it up. I had to go to the dictionary. Wiles. It's a trick. Or stratagem meant to fool, trap, or entice. Artful or beguiling behavior. Do y'all know anybody that acts that way, that acts like they're really your friend, but they're really deceiving you and tricking you and wanting to convince you to go their way and do what they want you to do. Artful or beguiling behavior. You know, Eve used the word beguile in Genesis when the Lord said, "Why did you eat of this fruit? Why did you do this?" Well, the serpent beguiled me. The serpent tricked me. You know, I've heard that word beguile. I knew, well, it had something, but I didn't really put a clear definition to it till this morning. Trickery. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Our battle is not against man, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Was the serpent real when he spoke to? Was his trickery real? Is there trickery today? Does it still happen today? Yes, it does. And it might be in brick and mortar down the street here. There might be some trickery going on there to get you to feel like that you're, what did the serpent tell Eve? You're going to be like a god if you do this. There's churches, people out there saying, come here and do this. Feel good about yourself. Eat of this fruit and you'll be elevated. You'll be as gods. You're not bad. You're not bad. But we are of, you know, we're not good. If we were good, Christ would not have had to come down and die on the cross to take care of our sins. You know, it's just amazing to me that people out there, and I love them. I love people that are sincere trying to serve the Lord. I love it. Are they always doing it out of truth and the correct spirit? Well, maybe not. But there's people out there that have a desire to serve the Lord, and I'd like to talk to them a little bit and tell them why they have that desire. The reason they have that desire is because they're one of the Lord's already. They think they have to go out and do this stuff so they can become one of the Lord's. If you got a desire to serve the Lord, blessed children, that's evidence that you are His. It's a beautiful thing. Now, when we come to the knowledge and life and immortality is brought to light through the gospel, Brother Don has explained this to you several times. Something being brought to light, if this room was dark and you didn't know what was in here and you walked in here, you wouldn't know what's here till we flipped on the light. And then you'd see chairs, podium, all of that stuff is brought to light. You know now what was already here. And that's what the gospel is, dear children. You know what's already there. When you hear the word of God and it touches you in your heart and you understand that, oh my gosh, I already have this. I am one of God's children because I love this. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing that these girls, they got up at 6:30, 6:45 this morning on their own. They knew that we had to come to church this morning. And they knew I want to leave at 8 o'clock. 20 minutes till 8, they were sitting in the living room ready to go. And it just made my heart just run over. How is it with you? What's your desire? What's your enthusiasm about coming to the house of the Lord? You know, I thought after he asked me to say a few words that I got to thinking, what has my mind been on this week? What has my thoughts been? Have I been thinking about the things of the Lord, or have I been thinking about the things of the world? Has my flesh overtaken me this week? Have I been rude to people? What have I done? What's been my demeanor this week? Have I been serving the Lord this week? And you know, you serve the Lord every day. You just don't do it on Sunday morning and Wednesday night. Your demeanor, your attitude, the way you treat people. And you know, people are watching you. These little girls have been watching every one of you. And they've been seeing the Lord shine in your heart. You think you don't have a place here in this church? I tend to argue with you. You're to be here, you're to smile, and you're to encourage young ladies like this. and those that are on the outside. Not just because this is my granddaughter and her friend, but there are other people who can see that too. If they see it, other people can see it. That's all I got to say about it, brother. Thank you so much, and I love each and every one of you, and continue to pray for this service and for Brother Don.
I appreciate not only Brother Gary's words, but his sentiments, because that's important. Just to kind of back up from where he ended there, he's talking about the young girls, all the young children in the church. I remember one time when it was said, from my dad, it didn't come from me, I'm copying it from my dad, studying it from him, where he talked about we need to take care of the young children because they're the future of the church. And he disagreed. He said, no, they're not. They're the church today. Those children are just as much an important role in this church as any of us that are older. He said, they play an important role today. We think of them like that, but he said, I like to think of them. We need them right now. They're just as important. And instead of them many times getting inspiration as us, as Brother Gary showed, sometimes we get inspiration from them, and that's very important. He made a comment today, and I'm always amazed at how the Lord works on the subject I've got on my mind. Brother Gary talked about, you know, one of the problems is that we're not good, and that's what we need to realize. We're not good. That we're by nature, we're bad. We're good only because the Lord has put His goodness in us. It's because He's circumcised our heart and made us realize that when we do bad, we still do bad, but we realize it most of the time and we feel guilty about it. When we recognize that we've done bad, sometimes we don't recognize it even, but when we recognize it, we feel guilty about it, and it bothers us, and we don't want to be bad. The only reason we're like that is because Christ puts Himself in us, gives us that ability to recognize good from evil, even though it doesn't mean we're always not going to commit evil, but it lets us recognize that difference. We wouldn't recognize that difference but for Him. And I also want to go back and pick up one thing that Brother Gary said from the sixth chapter of Ephesians. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord. He knows we can't be strong in ourselves. The only way we can be strong is to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. You know, so total focus there is on the Lord. Be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God. Not our own armor, that we may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil there. Everything that the Apostle Paul says there is talking about how we're to adopt those things that we see in God and Lord, that He's given us ability to see. Because he's talking about my brethren. He's talking about other members of the church. He's talking about you. It's who he's talking to. He's talking to those people that already are among the elect, and you're the ones that can recognize and know the strength in the Lord and the power of His might and the ability to put on His whole armor. I really appreciate Brother Gary's introduction this morning. And what I want to talk to you about is in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, way back over to the front, not too far from the front of the book. It's one of the oldest stories we have, but it goes right to the heart of where Brother Gary opened this morning. And that's a story in the 11th chapter of Genesis. It's a story about the Tower of Babel. Now, this goes right to the heart of what Brother Gary is talking about. He said, we're not good on our own. We're not good of our own nature. And that's the thing to point out here. This Tower of Babel, it begins at chapter 11, verse 1, and it's only 9 verses long. The entire story of the Tower of Babel is not but 9 verses long about the actual story of the tower. We'll pick up a little bit more of it in a minute. But it goes to the doctrine of the depravity of man. You know, and that's things we don't like to talk about, and we don't like to preach about them too often because we don't like to talk about, as Brother Gary said, that we're not good. You know, we each like to think of ourselves as good. We all want to think that way, and that's our pride coming from us. But we get that. If we are good at all, we get that not from ourselves. We get that from the Lord because He puts us in there and gives us that ability. Y'all all know the story of the Tower of Babel, and we'll go over it here in a minute in detail. But, you know, this is the incident in where men tried to build a tower to reach all the way up into heaven. They were going to build a tower against the Lord's commandments. They were going to build a tower and build it up into heaven. And the Lord put a stop to it in a unique way. And that's what we want to talk about this morning. But it was men thinking that they could take themselves to God. We don't take ourselves to God. He brings himself to us. We don't have the ability to go to him. He brings himself down to us. And this is what the Lord makes clear in this story about the Tower of Babel. And it goes to the basic doctrine of the depravity of man. You know, as Old Baptists, we believe in what we refer to simply as the TULIP doctrine, T-U-L-I-P, T being total depravity of man. We don't like to talk about that and don't like to preach about it because it's against our human nature. We don't want to think of ourselves as bad. But you have to understand the doctrine of total depravity in order to understand how good the Lord is to us and how his grace is the only thing that we're blessed with that gives us then the ability to love each other and to love him. The ability to recognize if we have a need of him, we recognize that need of him and realize by that recognizing, as Brother Gary said, once you recognize that we need him, that's when you realize you're a child of God. That's how you become a child of God, is when you recognize, I need the Lord. And that's when you recognize, I need to do good. I need to go do good works because of what he's already done for me. Not to get salvation, but to thank him and follow his directions for that salvation. Not only do we thank him and give him praise by our doing good works today for what he did for us before the foundation of the world and then what Christ fulfilled when he died on the cross, we thank him for that. And in doing that, he blesses us again. He gives us a blessing in this sinful world. And that's what the Tower of Babel is all about. It was the beginning of the state of Babylon. And that's what the Tower of Babel talked to us about, is the depravity of man and how the Lord saw this and how he addressed it. But you all know, if you go back in Genesis, you go back to the first few chapters. I believe it's through the world, how the Lord created it and how he created Adam and Eve and the beginning of that. And that carries us through the first five chapters. When you get to the chapter 6, the Lord says, well, now, Lord, just the world's been created for some time here, some hundreds of years after Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel. And he sees the wickedness of mankind. Verse 5 of chapter 6, God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his hearts was on evil continuously. Now, that's how we are without Lord. If the Lord didn't put himself in our hearts, he's describing every one of us right there. And before he puts himself in our hearts, that's what we're like. Every one of us, the wickedness in us is great, and every imagination and thoughts of our hearts is on evil continuously. We know down in verse 8, but there was one man that found grace in the Lord. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And that's where he gets into the story about the flood. And how Noah built the ark, took his three sons on her, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their wives, and eight of them, Noah and his wife, and Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their wives, eight people, were saved physically, saved in this world by the ark. And when they came in verse chapter 8, they landed on the mountains of Ararat, which is in modern-day Turkey. That's a mountain range. We don't know exactly which mountain it landed on. There is a Mount Ararat, but Scripture tells us it in the mountains, plural, a mountain range of Ararat, so we don't know exactly where they lived. But they got off the ark and started to restart their lives all over again. And the Lord told them, be fruitful and multiply upon the earth. Chapter 9, God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. In verse 7, and you, be ye fruitful, multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply therein. He gave them instructions. Now I want you to scatter throughout the earth. Populate the earth. Multiply, replenish it. All the people, of course, other than these eight, all the people perished in that great flood because the Lord saw they were all evil. That's the human nature of man. But Noah found grace, and he and the Lord saved he and his family on the ark, and then told them, now I want you to go forth and replenish the earth. He told them to go forth and scatter around the earth. And we know that that's how the earth was populated, was through these sons of Noah. And we can go back and trace how Japheth was the Gentiles, us, I don't know who all the background of all of you. I think most of you here are probably descendants of Japheth. the Gentiles, they went up into Rome in Europe and populated that period, became the Caucasian way of life. Ham, we know that he and his descendants populated Africa and over in the Far East, and that Shem was the father of all the nations of the Middle East, the Arab and the Israeli nations. And then, of course, we've had a lot of blending in since then. But that's where eventually they win, and that's what's described in chapter 10. Chapter 10 goes through and describes and gives us briefly, and I'm not going to go over it, but the descendants, immediate descendants of Japheth, the immediate descendants of Ham, and the immediate descendants of Shem, tells us how the earth began to be populated. But we had an incident happen at right at the end of chapter 9 that caused one of those sons to be cursed, and he and his family to be cursed, and that was Canaan. Canaan looked upon his father's nakedness. Noah, we know, drank too much, got drunk, and was laying naked in his tent, and Canaan went in and saw it and then went out and told his brothers, kind of gossiped about our father's naked. And the two brothers, Japheth and Shem, then took a blanket and backed up without looking at their father, backed up in and covered up their father. They were covering up his nakedness. And I have preached on the nakedness issue before and how the Lord curses the nakedness in a relationship, and all those relationships in Leviticus 18 are listed. Now, the Lord curses the nakedness, but the one he does not curse is the relationship between nakedness in between a husband and the wife. That's the one area where he blesses it to create the relationship necessary for a husband and wife to be one unit together. They're to share each other's nakedness. Now, I'm not talking just about physical nakedness. It includes that. But you share all sorts of other emotional and spiritual nakedness. You know, wives need support from their husbands from time to time. We know that we, as husbands, remember we talk about sometimes wives are a bit insecure, and they need that support from their husbands to cover their emotional nakedness. Men, us men, we like to be strong and tough, but every now and then we get down and depressed. Our pride gets injured sometimes. We may get fired from our job. We may get chewed out. We may lots of problems. We may run into financial hardships, and we get down in the dumps and we get depressed because our ego and our pride has been injured. That's nakedness in itself. Nobody can fix that faster than the wife. The wife can cover the emotional nakedness of the husband. And that's the reason that nakedness between a husband and a wife is blessed in the Lord. Not only physical nakedness, to create that intimacy necessary for a marriage and to keep it together, but also because you bond together as one and you take care of each other. And so there's a great blessing and a great sermon there that I don't want to get off into because I can't stop if I get off into it. So I don't want to preach on it, but that takes place at the end of that. But as a result of that, what I want to say, verse 25th, Canaan was the one went in and saw his father in his physical nakedness, and he was cursed because of that, because he went and told his brother, kind of like in a gossip-type fashion, laughing and, you know, going, look at our dad. He's drunk. And it says, cursed be Canaan, a servant of servants shall be. Canaan was the son of Ham. I believe it was not actually Ham that saw it. I believe it was Canaan, the son, because he's the one that got cursed. It was the family of Ham, and it talked about that, and they'll always be a servant of Shem and a servant of Japheth. And it discusses that, and then you get over here, because I say that to point it out, when we get over here in verse 6 of chapter 10, it talks about the sons of Ham, Cush and Canaan, and you get down here, and it says, and Cush begat Nimrod, verse 8. Cush, one of the sons of Cush, was Nimrod, and he became to be a mighty one in the earth. Now, let's just look at Nimrod here for a second. He became to be a strong man in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, in verse 10, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. Nimrod was the builder of the city of Babel. And then it goes on and says, he built it in the land of Shinar. And out of that land, he also went forth to Asher, and he builded Nineveh. And Nineveh, you remember, is a place where Jonah was sent by the Lord because it was an evil city, and the Lord sent Jonah over there to preach to those people. And Jonah didn't want to go at first, and he tried to run from the Lord, ended up getting swallowed by a whale. But so he learned his lesson. He quit running from the Lord and went over and preached to the people at Nineveh. And for a time being, he saved Nineveh. The people of Nineveh converted under his preaching, and he saved them. But some of the great evil cities of the world, particularly Babel, which became Babylon, and Nineveh, two of the great evil cities we know of, were built by this mighty warrior, Nimrod, who was one of the sons of the cursed lineage of Canaan and Cush and under Ham. So that's how we ended up with this, is that Nimrod built a city, went and built a city, and it reminded the same thing Nimrod did. If you go back and look, remember after Cain slew Abel back in the Garden of Eden? Cain slew Abel. What's the first thing Cain did after he was cursed by the Lord and he left his family, left his father and mother? It said he went and built himself a city. Cain went and said, built himself a big city, and he said he named the city Enoch after his son. He's trying to create a legacy for himself. Sometimes we do that. Instead of doing things in the name of the Lord, we do them in the name of ourselves. I think that's what we're fixing to see about Babel. Nimrod started this, and he took after it after Cain. And that's one of the things we get into that I hope the lesson we learned today is our pride and ego. When we start doing things for ourselves, instead, as Brother Gary introduced for us, in the name of the Lord and in his power and might, that's when we get ourselves in trouble. That's when our pride takes over, because we're taking that glory for ourselves. As you read this, when we get into this, think about all the buildings that are named after men so they can leave a legacy for themselves. All the things that we created. And I'll go out and donate a lot of money so I can get my name on the front of the building so people remember me after I did. Trying to create a great legacy for myself. Same way when many times when we give the church. If I come and give to the church, I want to make sure everybody knows how much I gave so you'll think highly of me. I'm doing that for you to think highly of me, as opposed to the way the almsgiving is supposed to be done in secret, and the Lord will reward you openly. What happens when somebody comes and gives something to the church? We're going to say, you know, oh, brother so-and-so, he gave $5,000 to the church, or $2,000, or $1,000. And that's going to make me think highly of him. That's our human nature. I like people who got money. We all do. You know, we always want to think about, you know, they're rich and powerful. I want to be close to them. I want to be friends with them. I know they are. And I want to give praise unto man. But what happens when we get a gift to the church of $2,000 anonymously? When we get a gift like that anonymously, who do we thank? Thank the Lord. That's a big difference. And whoever gave that is going to receive the blessings of the Lord. You cannot outgive the Lord. If you give the Lord according, give for the Lord in his name, let him get the praise, honor, and glory. It says he'll then reward you openly. Let's read about this Tower of Babel now, beginning in chapter 11. It's only 9 verses long. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Now we know that, you know, we got after Ham, Shem, and Japheth, they all was one family. They all spoke the same language, same dialect. And so they've stayed it. They've been that way together. And if you really look at this and study this, chapter 10 gives us the genealogy of all these people, of Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and you know Ham and all the Nimrod. It goes and tells us all the characters. And then we go back and look what happened during their life. So a lot of chapter 11 here happened before we get through chapter 10. In other words, 10 gives us a whole genealogy. And this month's banner of the love that I brought in here, I've given the genealogy of King Herod, so you can keep them apart. But you got to go back then, once you see how they all fall out, then you got to go back to the first and see how they became that way. It's like any time, you know, when you talk about the heritage of the United States, you think, you know, the Bush family. Well, you got to go back to Prescott Bush, the old man, to figure out how all these, same way with the Kennedys. You got to go back to the old man and then work your way through. But you first of all give the genealogy, and then you go say, well, John Kennedy was president. He had all these brothers. And so that's what's happened. Chapter 10, he's given us the genealogy, which includes Nimrod, who built Babel. And now we're going to get into the Tower of Babel. So actually we know first part of 11 actually happened somewhere over in the middle of chapter 10. So during that time frame, all of these are the sons of Noah, all these people that are in the world today, and they all speak the same language. We're all family. We all speak the same language. And there's a great contrast here in a minute between what's happening here and what happens on the day of Pentecost. And I think a great comparison with what's happening to us today in the world. The whole earth was one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they, we're talking about the whole nation, the world, all the people, as they journeyed from the east. Now it says, and remember, now where did the ark land originally? Landed on Ararat, and that's over to the east, that's in Turkey. So that's Turkey, and so they were all journeying down in here, they were all together, and they journeyed down here to this land, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Shinar is modern-day Iraq. It's where Babylon is. It's where now forgot the name of the capital of Iraq. What's the Baghdad? Yes. Now it's approximately in the same location as the Baghdad area. Same in Nineveh was in that same general area. But that's where they are. They're in the plain of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, this is the people talking. This is all the descendants of Ham, Shem, and Japheth. All the people are there together, and they're going to build a city. And Nimrod, we know, is the one that's going to build this great city. He's the great warrior. He's the great builder. He was, and I don't mean any disparagement of this because I don't want to get involved in politics, but he was the Donald Trump of his day. He was going to build all these great big cities, and he did, and that's what he's given credit for. And they said one to the other, again, men talking to each other. You notice, doesn't say anything about them going to the Lord for help. They went to each other. Go, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. Now we know if you get over here later and you see the Lord does his building, we build a temple, we build it out of stone from the earth. They're having to hand-make brick. They're making their own artificial man-made brick. And how are they sealing it together? With slime. Now, if you go study the history of this, this slime actually is a petroleum-type product. It's like tar. It's like asphalt. That's why if you go back and study back in that time, the slime they called, it had some adhesive qualities to it, but it's the tar, the petroleum substance that comes right out of the Middle East there. It's where you find oil. You'll also find this. You'll find tar pits. And those type of things. I think of it a lot. If you get a picture in my mind of when they have an oil spill out in the ocean and you have, you know, the oil slick come washing up on shore and it's real slimy and sticks to stuff. It's not great quality, but it has some adhesive because it sticks to your hand, gets all over you. Well, they had that wherever they had swamps and where they had some rivers there. And so we know there's a lot of petroleum in that country. So I'm sure they had some of this. It's called bitumen, I believe is what it's called today. But it's a petroleum substance like tar. They use it to make asphalt for pavements and those type of things. But it has a certain sticking quality to it. But still, there's a reason it's referred to as slime. It's not quality adhesive. But they're not using stone. Now, if you go over and read in when the temple was built, when Solomon was building the temple, he went out and cut the stones out in the quarry to fit perfectly, cut it out of the rock of the earth. And he built the temple out of solid stones. The Lord's house was built solid out of stones and cut to fit before they even brought it in. They didn't want any hammers or the noise of construction. They did all the work out there and then brought it in and the temple fit together perfectly the way they did the stones. And that's not what's taking place here. We've got man making man-made artificial stone, bricks. It's a clay that they take and straw and clay like we find out later they used in Egypt. The people had to make all these bricks. The Israel people had to make all these bricks out of clay and soil and straw so they could make them hold together. And that's what it's talking about. So they used brick for stone. They didn't use what the Lord uses. They used artificial man-made stuff. And they put it together with slime. And again, it has some adhesive qualities, but it's not like what the Lord would use. And you find out anything man does today, if it's done especially without the Lord, it's going to be put together with slime. And it won't last. You know, before we go any further, we got man building this city here and tells you how they're doing it and how they're fixing to build this tower. I want to take you over to Psalm 127. Y'all all know this. 127, verse 1. Except the Lord build a house, they labor in vain that build it. If we're trying to build a church here, we're going to fail miserably. But if we ask the Lord to build us a church here, it's going to be built solid. It's going to work. If we build it, it's going to build with our slime and our man-made stone. And it's not going to work. It's not going to last. It's going to fall apart. It's going to be made and pushed together with slime. But if we let the Lord build it, that's different. It'll last. It's always a good lesson to us. Everything about our lives covered in this. It's amazing how we can go back to one of these things, one of the first incidents that happened that still has great application to us today. They had brick for stone and slime they had for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the whole face of the earth. I read that quickly, just as you would normal reading. Let me read it now with a little different emphasis and see if you see something here. And they said, go to, let us build us a city. Now, who are they building this for? And a tower whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, name for ourselves. We're going to put our name on this, and people are going to brag on us because we're building this great tower. We're going to go to God. You know, if he won't come to us, we're going to go to him. Well, you don't go to God. God comes to you. The only reason we even have the ability to pray to him is because he's given that ability. He's created the avenue. He has to create the avenue before we can even approach him at all. And they're trying to create their own avenue to God. Let us build us a city and a tower that it may reach into heaven. Let us make us a name for ourselves. Again, when you want to give, whether it's to the church or some other thing, the Lord tells us later, Jesus tells us in the Sermon on the Mount how to give. We give anonymously. You give it in the name of the Lord so that he gets the glory. Who's going for the glory here? Who's going to get the glory in this building? We are. We want to build. Let us make a name for ourselves. We need to think about that every day in our lives, not only in the church, but outside the church in the world. Anonymous gifts are wonderful. We're coming up in this time of year, which is Christmas season. It's a great time to think about that. I know we give gifts to each other, and I don't want to get into the politics of whether we should observe December 25th is Christ's birthday or not. I think he was born in September, but it doesn't matter. I don't have any trouble with the gift-giving season. I think it creates great fellowship in the family, but we need to keep it in context. Let's don't get crazy here. But also, I've seen some people who have some wonderful traditions in their family. One in particular that I worked with one time, he told me every Christmas they go out and they get a box. They pick out a family somewhere who doesn't know, and they'll put a box together of gifts for the kids and food, whatever. And they'll go leave it on the front door anonymously. When those people see that, who are they going to thank? They're going to thank the Lord. And then the Lord will give a great blessing to those people who left that. And he'll give it to them openly. We keep wanting to give gifts. I want to give a gift to this college so they'll put my name up on the front. You know, I don't want to take a chance on anybody not knowing where that came from. You know, I want my name here so that I can get the glory today. But the Lord tells us if we'll do that quietly, he'll give us greater glory. And he'll give it to us openly if we'll do that stuff secretly and let him get the credit. Every single time we try to give him the credit, he repays us multiple times over. It's hard for us to do because our human nature is, we like these people. I want the glory myself. I want to build a great name for myself. But look, they're going to build this. Let us do it. We're going to build us a city for us and a tower that reach into heaven, and let us make a name for ourselves. And in Luke, and then they say, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Nimrod says, I want to build a city here, and a big city with my name on it, and let's keep a city so we can keep everybody together. Keep everybody together in this big city. What did the Lord instruct Noah and his family to do? Scatter on the face, replenish the whole earth. I don't want you all together. I want you to scatter out and replenish. There's a great lesson in here in this. We all want to live in the cities. I do live in the city. We know that's where we are today. We want to live in the cities. Where's all the trouble and all the violence in the world and all the drug problems and all the alcohol problems and all the addiction problems? They're in the cities because we get together and then we start acting like human beings. We start acting like nature of man because we all get together. I noticed Brother Joe. I had a good time with Brother Joe out there this morning. He's got his dog out in the pickup. Good-looking dog, by the way. Good-looking dog, got the opportunity to pet it. He's got a dog, and that's a wonderful pet. I love dogs because they can be such great pets. They're good. But what if you take that dog and you turn them loose with a group of other dogs? Do they stay the same way? Do they keep the same nature? No, they turn into a pack, and they get mean because they start relying on each other instead of on their master. Dogs are real good, one or two at a time, and they'll rely on their master, and they love their master. But you turn them loose and you let them get together, and they'll turn into a pack. We're the same way. And that's what's taking place right here at the Tabernacle of Revel. They get together, and they said, let's build us. Let's do this for us. We'll keep our little group here, and let's do this for us. And they wanted to build a city and stay together. Remember, they all came together. It says they all came down, verse 2, they all came down to go east and get on the plain. And they're not building the mountains where they've got, you know, good. They're building the plant of Shinar, which is a rock. They're building this house on sand. They go over and read the Sermon on the Mount. What the Lord says, what happens when you build your house on sand? When the winds and the storms come, it's going to be torn down. You're going to lose your house. Doesn't say you're going to lose the man, but you're going to lose your house. Well, they're building this out in the plain on the sand. They're using man-made brick and they're using slime. they're not using any of the tools the Lord has told us to do. First of all, we start with Him. And said, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth. Let's build a great big city here that will attract all the attention of everybody. And they'll see how good we're doing. They'll all want to come join us. And we're all going to rely on each other. And we know what happens in that. Then you turn into the pack. And then that's when we get into all these problems we have in the cities. You know, the rural areas have some share of troubles. But you notice they don't have near the troubles that we do in the cities. The cities are wonderful attractions. You get everything you want to eat and everything you want to buy. I'm in the same mode as we're all in that because we're all moving to the cities these days. That's not necessarily good. But we'll be okay if we keep in mind what the Lord is telling us here. We're not to run with the pack in the city. We're to excuse ourselves from the things of the world. Brother Gary said, let's don't get out here and be distracted in the world. Let's keep our minds and directions on the church and the Lord and what He's given us here that's set apart from the world. This church is different. It's different for a reason, because we can come here and separate ourselves from the world and be apart from that. Verse 5, it says, after they got this city up, this tower up and going, this big building going, the city and the tower, it says, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower. Now, He didn't have to come down to do this, but he's going to come down and inspect it. He's coming down, look, which the children of men builded. Now, the Lord didn't build this. He made it clear. Men built this. And the Lord said, behold, the people is one. They're all together and they're relying on each other. It's like a pack of dogs. And they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. Whatever their imagination is, they're going to rely on each other and they're going to do it. And when our imaginations start working, remember back over there where he said, and the imaginations of men will lead them into wickedness, solid? When we use our own imaginations, I'm going to do what feels good. I'm going to do what feels good in the flesh. I'm going to go do the things of the world that I'll enjoy instead of putting my top priority on the Lord. Giving us the exact directions. Nothing's changed since this time of the Tower of Babel. We're still living the same way today if we're not careful. And he gives us great instructions here. Again, this is why it's important we understand the natural depravity of man, but how reliance on the Lord gets us away from that and gets us out of that. He said, now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. They're doing what the Lord told them not to do. The Lord will come down to us. We don't have to try to go to Him. We're going to try to control the Lord by going to Him. We want to go to Him where we can take care of Him. I mean, we can get Him when we need Him, and then we can go down out of the building in the world when we don't need Him. That's not the way the Lord operates. He'll come to us, and we should praise Him and thank Him for that. And not let our imagination. This was an arrogant revolt against the Lord. And we still do this today if we're not careful with ourselves. We have an arrogant revolt. I don't need the Lord. I'm doing well. You know, I'm doing really good in this world. Maybe I'm making good money. Maybe I'm having a good time. Maybe I'm got some kind of great business, and I get to rely on myself. That's an arrogant revolt against the Lord. Whatever I have to thank the Lord for. I wouldn't even have the ability to even go out and do anything, make money or have friends or anything else, if the Lord didn't give me that ability to do it and do it in the right manner. We ought to thank everything we built. We ought to ask the Lord for His direction and then thank Him once He's given it to us. Verse 7, He said, go to, let us go down. This is the Lord talking. Let us go down. Who's us? Well, that's the Lord. But He's letting us right now. There's more than one personhood in the Lord. It's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The Lord is a multiple head. Let us go down and there confound their language that they may not understand one another's speech. He came down and changed the language of all the people so they couldn't communicate with each other. You know, it is difficult to talk about building details and following specifications of what you got to do to build when you can't talk to the guy. You know, we have this from time to time. It's a struggle when you can't communicate with each other. They all had one language, and the Lord came down and confounded their language. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of the earth, and they left off to build the city. They stopped building the city, and they scattered. Because I don't get along anymore. We don't even speak the same language. You know, we use that sometimes as a word, and there's a lot of truth in that. And that's exactly what the Lord did. They had to stop. They couldn't work together anymore because the Lord confounded their language. And what he commanded them to do, scatter about the face of the earth, his purpose is not going to be denied. He scattered them across the face of the earth, which is what he told them to do. He scattered them over the face of the earth. Therefore is the name of it called Babel. That's where they get the babblings. And this later turned into the city of Babylon, we learn later. The name of it is called Babel, because the Lord there did confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth. The Lord commanded them to scatter, and they didn't do it. They wanted to stay together. And that's not what he wanted from them. He wanted them to separate and apart, replenish the earth. His purpose is not going to be denied and stopped. And he saw to it that his purpose was carried forth as it should have been. Now look what happened here. Now look, this is the beginning of Babel and Babylon. Always the great enemy of the Lord is Babylon. You know, compare that with Jerusalem. We can be in Babylon, and Babylon is a great picture of the sin of the world today. It's the thing of the world, the sin of the world that attracts us in a human being sense, attracts us out of church and out into the world. The world's got all sorts of things that would be attractive to you today. And it is attractive to all of us in our human sense. That there's lots of stuff on TVs. You know, there's football games and there's movies and there's all sorts of things we can do. We can go to football games on Saturday afternoon and Saturday night and go to tailgate parties and be there at midnight and wake up, you know, and I'm a little too tired to go to church today. Well, our priorities ought to be here first, come to this and not be distracted to those things of the world. That's Babylon. The idolatries and the things of the world is Babylon. Babylon was always a great enemy of the Lord's people from there on out, all the way through Nebuchadnezzar when he came in and took the city of Jerusalem and destroyed the temple and captured a lot of the people. Babylon has always been a great enemy of the church. Contrast that then with Jerusalem. If you want to go read about Babylon, go read 17th, 18th, 19th chapter of Revelation. How Babylon will one day be destroyed. The Lord will destroy Babylon in its entirety. He will destroy all the sin of the world. Talks about the conquering of Babylon the Lord will accomplish for the end of time. And then you go into the 21st chapter of Revelation. It says, but there's going to be a new Jerusalem. Now over there, if you're in Babylon, you are a spiritual prostitute in Babylon if you go join them. But if you're in Jerusalem, the holy city, you become the pure bride of Christ. That's a comparison. Look what took place on Pentagon with the coming of the law. We got rid of the law. The Babylon is the law, and the law, you know, if you follow the law, you're going to have to then follow the law as far as its punishment's concerned too. But under the law of grace, not the law of grace, the doctrine of grace which replaces the law, that's what took place on the day of Pentecost. Look here, the Lord went through and confused their language so they couldn't communicate with each other. Look what the Lord did to those preachers on the day of Pentecost. All the preachers came out there and preached in their Hebrew tongue. Were people confused? There were people there from all sorts of nations. People there had all these languages, you know, the Lord had given them now. And they came into Jerusalem and every man had his own language. When those apostles preached in Hebrew, how did all those peoples from France and Crete and Greece and Rome, how did they hear them? They each heard them in their own language. Now, there's the power of the Lord. I've talked about, you know, and that's it. Hopefully when the Lord blesses you to get up here, and there's nothing worse than preaching when the Lord doesn't bless you. It's the best thing in the world to sit down and thank the Lord done that, and I don't always know the difference. There's times when I've been up here and I've said, I did a terrible job. I sit down and I thought, gosh, I didn't give them anything even to think about today. Invariably, when I'm thinking that, somebody will come up and say, boy, you touched me today. You said exactly what I need to hear, and I thought, it didn't come for me. I preached in one language, and they heard it in a different language. That's the power of the Lord, and that's the might of His grace. And that's the distinction we have between the picture of Babylon and the picture that Christ has in the kingdom of God today. What we get out of this church, what we get out of this book, that's the power of grace. We can follow Babylon. We can go be with men, and we can get together with men and get the power of the world. And we can build buildings and put our names on it. And we're going to get the blessings that Jesus tells us over there in Sermon on the Mount. You're going to be blessed to men. You'll get your reward. But when you give anonymously and we do things in the Lord and everything we do is for the glory of the Lord and not for the glory of ourselves, then we get a greater benefit. We get all the benefits that come with being the bride of Christ. And when we're the bride of Christ, we're pure and we're clean. He cleanses out all those things of Babylon and the world that were going on the day of the Tower of Babel. We serve a wonderful Lord and serve in the power of His might. I want to close today by going over to Hebrews. Apostle Paul in the book of Hebrews was talking about the faith chapter 11, about the faith of everybody. Here, and he talks about in verse 8, the faith of Abraham. He was talking about Abraham when he was called to leave and go to another country. And by verse 9, by faith he sojourned into the land of promise. And he gets to verse 10, and he said, For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Look for the city that God builds, not for the city that man builds. You're going to look for that city and you're going to enjoy it. And when you do that, you're going to be enjoying the benefits and the blessings that come with being the pure bride of Christ that Christ wants us to be. I appreciate your kind attention. My prayer is that the Lord will richly bless each of you. Brother Gary, do we